Alex, if you could, let everyone know who you are, what you do, and why we're here.
Absolutely. So my name is Alex Bochel. I am an EDM producer, DJ, music marketer. I do a lot of things related to music. All of it is surrounding my artist project, and that's just my name for all of my EDM, and all of the things I do are to support that EDM. So I do a whole bunch of things like marketing, I do wedding DJing, all to basically to push my funds into my music to grow my name in music. So I don't really have a business around those other things. I am basically a contractor, so I work with companies to do those other things in order to funnel stuff into my music.
Right. So how'd you get started with marketing music? So I'm guessing at some point you probably started making music. And then usually sometime later, someone will realize like, oh, no one's listening to this unless I do something. So what was that journey like?
Yeah, so the making music started years ahead of the actual marketing for the music. And it was eighth grade. I wrote my first song. It was a heavy metal song that I wrote using my Paper Jams guitar, which is that plastic guitar that used to be heavily marketed on Cartoon Network. And I used the drum app on my iPod Touch to give myself some drums. And then at the time I was into metal, so I did my own vocals and they were screamo vocals.
Nice.
The song was called I Have to Go to the Bathroom, and not a single person other than myself and the unfortunate friends that I showed actually listened to it. But from there I was like, this is really fun. I like making joke music. And so I started making 8-bit music, video game, like chiptune style music. And then I heard about this website called Fiverr. They basically, back in the day, it was contractors for $5 only.
Yeah.
And so I started selling 8-bit music to people for $5. That inspired me to set up a SoundCloud so that I could post all of my 8-bit music. And some of those songs got some listens on SoundCloud. And like, I think I was super excited when I had a song that was over 1,000 listens on SoundCloud. From there, I went to college, took a very long break from music, and my senior year of college started making EDM, and within 2 years, I started focusing on marketing.
Nice.
The actual marketing began about the time that I met you, actually. It was through Adam Ivey's course, and I can't remember why we got to talking, but you basically were just starting out doing Facebook ads.
Yeah.
And you had just started marketing a playlist that you had your own music on. And you were like, yeah, it works. Like, I'm getting, like, people are listening to my music, they're following the playlist, and now I'm a SoundHub curator.
I think in Adam Ivey's thing, because so just so everyone kind of knows what we're talking about, all the cats, I heard them meow.
I'll just keep removing her.
We were both in Adam Ivey's accelerator program, which I won't go too in depth into what that is. But that was kind of my first like big push into music marketing, was learning stuff from Adam Ivey on YouTube. And then like fast forward, eventually we actually ended up working together, and I was actually a second coach in that for a bit. And then I was helping him out with some other things. I don't know how much he would want me to share, so I won't go into the details, but we ended up working together for a bit. And last time I was in Florida, we got dinner at Olive Garden.
I love Olive Garden. Great choice for it.
Yeah. And so that's how me and Alex met. I don't remember if I was like a coach in the course at that point, or I was still a student in the course at that point. I think I might have been a coach by then, but I'm not sure.
You were not a coach, and then you became a coach while I was in it.
Yeah.
So both. But you're right. I should step back. The marketing of playlists wasn't the very first thing. The very first thing was YouTube videos, Instagram promotion, things that Adam talked about on his YouTube channel. So I had been posting on Instagram and doing, you know, commenting on people's posts and messaging people when they first followed me. And all of those things worked really well to get like people that were good supporters, like really that felt connected to me and my music, but it didn't build up a lot of streams per se. Mm. I mean, I could get a few hundred on release day and then it would trickle off from there, but it didn't make a really big difference in streaming. And for me, the streaming is where I want to make most of my revenue from as yeah. an artist. That's just what I'm choosing to focus on. So when you showed me the whole playlist thing, I set up my first Facebook ads campaign. It was a click campaign for a playlist that I had. And I mean, within a few weeks, I had it up to 1,000 followers, but every single click was from India. And I think I was running a click campaign and it was like 1 cent per click. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. I'm a marketing genius. and I got lots of streams on the music, but that was the main start. All of the more sophisticated Facebook ads things came after that.
Yeah, back then, for those of you who haven't been watching my channel for that long, when I first started making videos on this topic, I was using link click campaigns. And then it was like by the third video I was making it, I had switched to conversion campaigns around third, fourth video, because it just like stopped working one day. And I don't know if it was like it stopped working then, or it was just like never working that efficiently. And it was just because I had zero information on Spotify that it just seemed like it was working well. But there was like a period of time where traffic campaigns were a little more reliable than now, where they're like, they can work. They're just like flipping a coin, or probably even more accurately, rolling a freaking dice. Like if I make like 5 traffic campaigns, like 4 of them will fail.
Right. And I also noticed too, when they don't fail, they always come out to be about, you know, slightly less effective than every conversion campaign, because I always track my cost per, if I'm doing advertising for a playlist, I'll track it based on cost per follow to the playlist and cost per stream over time that the playlist actually creates. And the link click is a far cheaper thing than the conversion.
Yeah.
But it gets less followers and less streams overall.
Yeah, totally. And I've seen ones where like the cost per link click is the same as the cost per conversion. And it's just like, it ends up working the same. It's like, okay, cool. Well, why wouldn't I use this traffic one? It's like, well, because you're paying the same per person, but now you don't have the pixel tracking. And so it's just like, what's the point? You know, if it's cheaper and it works well, then it's worth it. And I do know some people who have really cheap, well-performing link click campaigns, but it's like, that's like a rare thing in my experience. And I mean, I talk to like 15, I do like 15 consultation calls a week, right? And so for the past 2 years I've been doing it, I've talked to a lot of people who have run a lot of traffic campaigns, and I've seen a lot of failures. And so that's why when people ask me, it's like, well, how do you know? You've only shown a couple in the videos. It's like, well, I don't show all the ones in the videos, and I also don't show the hundreds or 1,000 plus people I've talked to's numbers either. So don't use traffic campaigns, folks. But so the playlisting, I guess if you were to kind of describe the everything you've kind of built to this point, like how many playlist followers do you have? What have you built your Spotify to, and like streams, monthly listeners, follow, whatever metrics you think are kind of cool to share?
Yes. So playlists, I have probably 4 playlists that I've focused on. And between all of them, it's believe around 12,000 followers per playlist. I'm going to pull up the exact number now, but it's fun to look at streams coming from a certain playlist, because when I built my first few playlists, they were like, it was like gaming music, or it was like emotional EDM, but
EDM music to take you to a mountaintop, right?
That's exactly what it was. But I've started getting into more like utility playlists as well. So my Twitch playlist, that is my main EDM playlist now, has about 4,000 followers on it. It had 7,000 listeners total, but the number of streams it's bringing in, it's been over 165,000 streams. So the stream per listener is like phenomenal. And that's compared to the other playlists that I have that I've grown. Those ones don't even come close. Like 2,000 listeners, but it's only created 9,000 streams. So the playlist thing has helped my music a lot. But most of the streams I've gotten have been through direct traffic right to a certain song or to my artist profile. And so my overall Spotify streams crossed 1 million earlier this year, which was a huge milestone for me.
Yeah.
And it's congrats. About, thank you so much. getting closer to 1.5 million. And then about 5,000 followers, and throughout since I've started releasing my music, 187,000 listeners. So a lot more streams than listeners, which is a goal for me, because I want people to be listening a lot as opposed to a lot of people listening and
one larger artist I did some consultations with. They have like 600,000 monthly listeners and like, you know, 90,000 followers or something. And the thing that blew me away about their audience was that they were getting on average 7 streams per listener, which is like exceptionally high from
what I saw. Especially for a big artist.
Yeah, yeah. And which, like, I know a few people around that size, and like usually people have between like 2.5 and 4, I would say, is kind of like the average range I see. Unless is someone's like entirely reliant on playlisting, then it's like a 1.3 or something. But
yeah,
for artists who have either a big organic following or ad following, it's like 2.5 to 4-ish most people. But these people were like a 6 or a 7. And for them, it was like they've been a band for like a decade, so they have the benefit of time. They've done the tours, they do ads, they've done the playlisting, they have a big social media presence on TikTok and other platforms too. So, but like whatever they've done, they kind of did some magic that got the stream per listener rate up. And that's like, when I saw that data, I was like, this is fantastic. And they're like, yeah, that's like our proudest achievement, because like,
yeah,
they consider that like a, you know, a quality metric, which I think you and I both do too.
Yeah, that shows that it's not just, you know, really good marketing that's getting their streams up. It's the music is really good, which for artists, that's the point.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah, and even across my songs, like, you know, you might have certain songs that do good or bad in the Facebook ads, but it's better if, like, you have a song that is getting, like, 6 streams per listener than something that's getting 3 streams per listener or 2 streams per listener. And, you know, that's kind of, I care about the quality of that more than I do like the quality of the, like, I guess the low cost per conversion. Obviously low cost per conversion matters because that's how you get the people, but like a low cost per conversion with a bad save rate, a bad listen rate, a bad playlist ad rate, a bad follow rate is just like, okay, let's do a different song or something.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, and seeing how many playlists people added to and what playlists people added to, all of those things help a ton with figuring out if, like, do people really connect with my song?
Right. Totally. So when it comes to actually running conversion campaigns, which, Calvin, I saw you asked, what do you recommend? I think you asked that when I was talking about traffic campaigns. Basically, conversion campaigns, which I have a boatload of videos on this channel about. But for you, Alex, if someone comes to you and says, you know, I'm running a conversion campaign, it's going badly. And obviously they would show you some stuff, you know, and kind of, and you kind of know, but like, let's say it's just kind of going really expensive. What are some common things you would look at in the campaign or try in the campaign to get the cost per conversion down for their campaign?
A lot of times if I look at an artist's campaign, they're only targeting like the United States. And so I check their audience, see if they're targeting a big enough group of people. If they're targeting a big enough group of people, take a look at their creative to make sure the creative, you know, makes sense and has their song in it and has volume, and make sure nothing's just completely broken. But a lot of times different parts of the song make a huge difference. And so I love seeing that there are like at least 3 different sections of the song, because you have no idea which section is going to perform the best. And a lot of times it's not the chorus. It's the boring verse that you don't think people would want to click on, but there it is, that 10 cents per conversion compared to 30 cents for the most exciting part of the song. If the ad creative looks good, check out their ToneDen and Spotify data. If everything looks pretty good, but it's still really expensive, I pretty quickly jump to do a new song. Like, wait till your next release, try a new song, because there are tons of things you can do to bring down the cost of conversions. But at the end of the day, it's going to make a very small difference compared to running that same well-built setup for a song that just happens to connect with more people. Yeah. And that's not to say the quality of one song is better than the other. It's just people who see it on Facebook and Instagram click on it more and listen to it more. And that's something that I jump to more quickly than, yeah. you know, trying like a whole bunch of different styles of setting up campaigns.
That's one thing I've learned over time too. I do try a ton of things before I abandon a song, but before I start a song, I think of like my plan B budget, where like, you know, let's say for example, this song, I'm going to spend 1,000. If it does badly, I'm going to plan for 500. And so what I'll do is like I promote every song no matter what, but if it does badly, I'm spending less. So that way, when I get a song that performs above average, I can afford to spend more. And, you know, if a song is doing badly, like sometimes you can turn it around pretty dramatically. Like I've had songs go from like $1 a conversion down to 40, 50 cents a conversion. But you're probably not going to get something that starts off at $1 a conversion down to 20 cents a conversion. Like yeah. it's happened, but like, if you go through the motions like in the first week or 2 weeks and you've tried, you know, different parts of the song, different styles of creative, maybe performance versus lyric video versus cover art, and then you've tried different audiences and like it's getting to the point where like nothing's really doing anything, like you can definitely optimize and get the cost down, but you're right, like different songs perform vastly differently a lot of the time.
Right. And it depends on what that artist strategy is too. If they're an artist who has spent a couple grand on production in a nice studio and hired a mixing engineer who has worked on big bands music before, and they've put a lot of music into the or money into that song, and they're not releasing another song this year, then it's like, okay, we'll try absolutely everything and make some out there decisions and try some new tactics that I haven't even tried before. But if it's an artist who's got like, you know, all of their work is on their laptop, they release a new song every month, then I'm way quicker to just cut it, go to the next one.
Definitely. There was one guy I've been talking to recently. He had a very big budget for his new song. He had a music video. He rented like a venue and he had a launch party for it. And he didn't have a new song coming out super recently or super soon after it. So it was very important for the song to do well. So what we did after it, the new song performed horribly, compared to his last songs. And, you know, this is after trying a bunch of ads. I think, like, we tried 12 different creatives. We tried, like, 10 different audiences. And so what I did, just in the interest of getting people to the new song, is I duplicated the old campaign that was using the old song that was working. And all I did is I changed the toned end link that he was using, or hyped it link, I forget what he was using, to go to the new song. So like the video was old song, landing page, old song, but Spotify, new song. And the cost per conversion did exactly as it did for the old song, but all the streams carried over to the new song with like not a single person complained that like, hey, you bamboozled me and sent me to the wrong song. Like the engagement's great and people like seem to be engaging and saving the song right. So that's a plan B, I guess, if you don't mind being a little shady.
I like that idea a lot. That's like some guerrilla marketing. I would 100% try that. In fact, I have a campaign I'm running for myself right now, and it's my most expensive campaign I've run for one of my own songs at, I think, 52 cents per conversion. Usually it's around 20 or below, and this is with tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3, and a couple of the do not use countries. So I started off with just tier 1, and then it was like 80 cents or so, and then came down to 52, adding all those countries. But I have a campaign that's running at 8 cents per conversion. I think after this call, I'm going to go switch those and see what happens, because I love that idea.
Yeah, and our plan, like when we first did it, I was like, we'll do it for like, you know, a couple days, and if everyone starts ripping you a new one on social media, we'll turn it off and we'll think of something else. But then it was just like, this is just working fine. Not a single person has complained. And so, yeah. Everyone watching, feel free to steal that idea.
I wish I'd heard of that sooner. I would have tried that
earlier. I learned it from Young L3X, or Young Lex, whose name is actually Alex Devon now on Spotify. But he was one of my, I think he was like my one of my first three interview videos I've ever done.
I think I remember that one.
And he told me he used to do that. I was like, I'm not going to fucking do that. That's dumb. And then it just like, he was totally right. It works. You know, I mean, and so honestly, I think I might do that if I ever have a new song and it's doing badly, instead of going all the way to 500 promoting it as is, I might just be like, meh, let me just use the old song and funnel some traffic to it. And that's actually a really cool thing with the waterfall release strategy too. when you have like one song on like the Waterfall release is crushing it, you're sending people to the EP, the Waterfall EP anyway. So every time a new track comes out on the Waterfall, you're sending people to that new song. And so you can just keep making the winner the one that you actually keep running. Yeah.
I love that idea. My fallback backup strategy had always been make it a playlist, put that as the first song in the playlist and try to market that, because almost always playlists come out to be cheaper than individual songs for whatever reason, but this could work really well, I think.
Yeah.
I'll watch out for comments and see what my inbox says, but I definitely am intrigued.
Totally. So when it comes to the whole Facebook ad thing, conversion campaigns to Spotify, are you using Toneden or Hyped It, or it's Toneden, right?
Toneden. Because it was free. It was the first one I started using. I have had zero issues, so I haven't switched yet.
Did you ever notice that ?SI issue?
Yeah. So I always copy my link in fresh, but I didn't notice it until you had mentioned it recently. So I don't know if I have incorrectly put in the link, but I've never had an issue where the campaign has just completely not worked at all. So I'm assuming I haven't had the ?SI issue.
Yeah, and for everyone that has no idea what I'm talking about, Toneden would have this thing where, like, if you didn't copy the link from Spotify with this, like, ?SI code at the end, it wouldn't, like, open up the Spotify app correctly. So it would open up in the mobile browser, and it wouldn't be logged in to Spotify. But it seems to be hit or miss of, like, who has that problem and who doesn't. Because I've had some people where they had awful campaigns with great cost per conversion, but zero streams in Spotify. And when that happens, there's kind of like three issues of like, it's either they're targeting bad countries, they're targeting bad placements, or three, Toneden ?SI glitch thing. And I've seen people where like, all we did is fix the ?SI thing and their campaign just starts working. But then other people have fantastic campaigns and I look and they don't have it. And so people keep asking me like about that either in calls or in comments, and I guess you're the proof that it's not a consistent issue. It's a hit or miss issue.
I don't understand that. That kind of thing is what keeps me up at night whenever I'm running a campaign. If it's not going well, I'm like, could there be some wacky issue?
Yeah.
Like the ?SI thing that's just causing this to tank, or is my song just not as good as I thought it was?
Right. Yeah, Toneden had a down period like 6 months ago where it was your landing pages were down for like 24 hours, but the back end was like out for several days. And they have like various things like that are why like I don't use Toneden myself now. I do recommend a lot of new people use it just because it's free, it's easy to set up, and it works 99% of the time. But that's one reason why I don't personally use it, because I care, like, you know, when you spend enough on ads, it's just like I feel like paying $30 or $10 or whatever a month to save any issue like that is well worth it. But
I recommend to people to do Hyped It, but once I'm at the next level of spending for my personal Facebook ad campaigns, I'll probably do that. I just haven't gone. My ad spend isn't too crazy. So
yeah, a lot of new people too. It's like Toneden removes so much headache with the custom domain crap. With Hyped It and Feature FM, it's like way more annoying. And so you're using Toneden, and because another thing a lot of people ask me is, should I pay for something? Like, do I have to get a paid service to get good results? Because they see me using Feature FM or Hyped It in most of my videos. And you're the proof in the pudding. You just use Toneden and it works fine. You've never noticed an issue and you have no complaints. So,
I guess I've gotten lucky on that front compared to some other people's experiences with Toneden. But at least we know what the issues likely would be. So they can be fixed if something does go wrong. But it certainly doesn't give you faith that in the future things won't go wrong again.
Right. So Calvin has a bunch of good questions today. So you guys primarily push Facebook ads. And I guess the answer is yes, but I want to rephrase the question for you, Alex, to say, what would you recommend outside of Facebook ads for promoting your music? Because I don't think either of us only do Facebook ads. It's just we both spend most of our money on Facebook ads.
Yeah.
So what else? Yeah, exactly. What else have you done that you found works, and what else have you done that you found doesn't work?
Let's see. So I'll start with stuff that does work. Aside from Facebook ads, there hasn't been too much that results in that big of a volume of streams that has worked that well. Aside from, you know, SubmitHub and playlisting. And that can work nicely. It just shouldn't be the only strategy, but it definitely has worked for me. And especially more recently, as I've made a couple of songs that are more the modern style of EDM, they've been a lot easier to get onto other people's playlists.
Yeah.
But the other main thing is Instagram. That's where most of my current fans reside. And Instagram's always worked really well for me. I always DM everyone that follows me. That works great because people are like, whoa, I didn't know that you would talk to me. And then they say, hey, this song, The Hopeful Effect, I love this song so much. I've been listening to it all summer, and that always feels really good. So it's almost like fishing for a compliment because you're putting yourself in front of them. And then, you know, if they do like your music and that's why they followed you, a lot of times they'll say it. Commenting on other people's posts 100% does work. There was a point, summer of 2020 is where I went so hard with this. But I grew like 2,000 followers, and that's still where my Instagram is at, funny enough, because I stopped doing it. But I would like have a little chart, and I would put a little tally mark every time I commented on someone new's post, and I would do 40 every single day, and then I would go through and respond to all of the people who followed me and send them a DM. And that, like, I think what I calculated it out to be was 8% of the people who I commented on their post would end up following me. And so then I could say, okay, well, if I want 1,000 followers, I just need to comment on a lot of people's posts, and then 8% of them will end up following me. So that, it really does work. And most of my biggest fans are from that kind of thing, are from Instagram in some way. And then the other thing that I love, and I've only been doing for about a year, is Discord. So I made a Discord server for all of my music fans. And so it's like, it's not as big as, you know, the amount of people who follow me or the amount of people who listen to me on Spotify. But like, I am like, okay, these 100 people, like, this is it. These are my people. Like, they're the ones who are there for me when I'm having a bad day. Tell me my music is good when maybe it isn't really. that listen to songs when they release. Like, I can count on these people. And it's really cool to have that, to have this like really important, group of people who I like spend a lot more time with than all of the people from Spotify. And I know that like that's the future of like what can help me grow as an artist. Once I get the streaming revenue coming in, I'm going to put all of that extra money into like building really good close knit communities on like Discord.
I started
email us as well.
I started messing with the Discord and Facebook group thing recently. I did a video on like how to run Facebook Messenger ads to kind of have conversations with fans on a kind of an automated way, but also like actually talking with them. And I set up a mini chat flow, I think they call it, where it'll like when they message me from the ad, it like has a conversation with them. Obviously, I'm assuming 90% of people know it's a robot conversation. But it's like kind of talking to them and kind of guiding their journey a bit. And at the end, it's like, hey, by the way, I have a Facebook group and I have a Discord community. Click here to join. And it's been really cool. It's a lot of work, I will say. But it's also hard to know like what to actually talk about. Because it's not like you can't have a community where all you do, it's like once a month, you're like, hey, new song, bye. You know, it's like you I think you need to think about other things that your community's for. But you so I guess one, you can run Facebook ads to grow those things, which is cool, but it's also cool to just have it be something that only your most diehard people go to. So I guess in your community, what kind of like what do they call them? what does Discord call the subgroups, the sub servers on your server?
Oh shoot.
Is it just rooms or?
It's not rooms. Channels.
Channels, yeah. So what channels do you have? What do you talk about? And you know, what has that been like, I guess?
Yeah, so it started, I'm trying to remember back when I first created it. So we first created it, and the reason that I created it was so that I could play Minecraft with my fans. Because in the EDM world, especially my style of EDM, that's like gaming EDM,
yeah,
a lot of people play Minecraft. So I set it up to play Minecraft with them. And so I got a Minecraft realm, invited everyone from the Discord onto the Minecraft realm, and we used the Discord to do voice chat, and we had like a channel for the pictures of the Minecraft realm that we created, and I would go live on Twitch and play Minecraft with them, and then they would watch it from Twitch or from the Discord stream. And that was like that was so cool, because I remember the first day we did it, we had like 20 people playing at the same time, and we made it this whole event, and it was awesome, because like I knew all of these people from Instagram, and now I was hearing their voices and interacting with them in a game. It was like that was a very magical experience. And
yeah,
like, that kind of thing at this point doesn't result in me making more money, which is what I need to do as an artist to survive, but it's so satisfying and gratifying. Yeah. It just like filled my heart. So we did that. We have channel for we have one channel that's just like this bot that will pose a question to us, and then we'll talk about that question. A channel for art. I have a lot of artists in the Discord, like drawing artists that make beautiful artwork. We have music producers in there too, so we have one for music production, and that's pretty much it, I'd say. We don't have a ton of channels, but you know, the general one is what's used the most.
Yeah, I think a lot of people should just kind of pick whatever their hobby is and make that, or whatever their hobbies are, and make those channels. Because like for you, it's essentially like you like playing Minecraft. Okay, cool. There's a gaming one. You like making music, and so there's a music production one. And like, you know, and for me, I'd probably actually do a similar thing. I mean, I already have a Discord. I think I actually did add a gaming channel, because I don't game a ton, but I'll usually play a couple hours of like FPS games a week, like either Overwatch, which I love, or Halo Infinite, which I love but wish was better. and then you know, I do Call of Duty with my friends, so I think I'm at some point I might try doing that, like on my music YouTube channel, which is not the same as this YouTube channel, doing like live streams, and then kind of that, using that as a, because like there's a couple thousand subscribers on there, so kind of using that to not only like get more watch time on that channel and drive more people back to my music videos, but also to drive them over to Discord so they can like be part of the gaming thing, and then maybe have it where like eventually, when there's enough people, do like custom games where I could make like, because Halo Infinite, you know, whenever they freaking add the custom, well, I think you can do custom ones, but it's hot. Either way, this isn't a gaming channel, but you know, it's you know, do stuff like that, and it's not going to be something that like is going to grow your audience per se, but it's something that kind of enriches the experience that an audience member who likes what you do experiences, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that stuff, that feels so real. I mean, seeing a save rate is a nice thing to see, but like having someone who has just like played Minecraft with you 10 times and is always in like my Instagram DMs and always shares the songs to their stories, it's like, that's so cool. Like that's, there's something so special about that.
Yeah.
Like I want to grow that more and make that bigger. But my current focus, it's just laser focus, get streaming revenue, then take the streaming revenue, build everything else up. And I know that's backwards from a lot of ways that people suggest to do it, but I have very specific reasons for wanting that, and that's how it's going to be. But even now, even though it's, those things are smaller, they're awesome.
Yeah.
And if anyone is watching this that I've just described, you know who you are.
So you just mentioned that streaming is, you know, what you want to be your number one income source for music. I guess like what's preventing you from doing shows? Because I have my own reason why I don't play shows, which a lot of artists say is a good revenue stream. Although, spoiler alert, while it can be, it's often listed as a marketing expense for a lot of artists playing shows and touring. But it can be a good moneymaker, especially in the electronic music world. So are you doing shows? If not, why not? And yeah.
So I do DJ, but it's mostly weddings.
Yeah.
So I'm not dropping my latest banger at a wedding. But that I do the weddings because that's a really good income source. Yeah. When it comes to playing shows, like EDM shows, it's tougher. I looked into doing that, but it's a tougher sell to get one of those than I had hoped for. I'm not opposed to doing it. I would have a lot of fun doing something like that. But when I contact promoters, and I do this in my local area mostly because that's where I have the biggest pull. I have a lot of listeners in this area. I have a lot of friends. I have a lot of family. I could pull 50 people to come see me play, which for a promoter is pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
One of our EDM clubs here is only, I feel like it's only like 200, 300 people can fit in there. It's really small. If I were an opener at something like that, I could pull a good audience. I could get a lot of people to buy drinks, like all of the stuff that they need. And I say this in my emails to them, and then they respond. They ask for my social media, and I send it to them, and then they never respond again. I did have one promoter in Philadelphia who was down to give me a shot. He said if I can guarantee that I bring 30 people out, he'll give me an opening slot. But the other issue with all of that is I hear through other workers who have worked at these EDM venues that a lot of their opening DJs haven't even gotten paid for any of the things they've done in the past year. And yeah. That they're business-wise, they're not very responsible, and they don't really care too much about like the artists that they have come up that aren't the ones who are selling, you know, thousands of tickets. So it seemed to me that it was a lot more trouble than it was worth. Wedding DJing pays way more than club DJing, and I will wait until my music is so popular that people come to see me for my music, and I don't have to convince a promoter that they need to book me. I would just rather do that. Yes, yeah. And I see Calvin says, tell them you will sell 30 tickets. That is what I basically did.
Yeah. I've like promoters are interesting. Like I've heard so many horror stories from artists, but I've also had consulting clients who are promoters ask for my help with ads because they're trying to promote a show. But the problem is a lot of the artists I talk to, obviously, I mean, just like record labels and artists and managers and whatever, there's good and bad everywhere. So like promoters get the bad rap. There are a lot of bad actors, but there's also plenty of good ones. But the bad horror stories I've heard is that one, they don't do any promoting. They're just like, they basically buy out a venue and then they're giving some money of that to the artist. And then they basically sell the tickets and make a bunch more money than everyone else involved. And there's different variances of that. But like sometimes they'll book shows of artists or decide how much to pay artists by like specifically how many TikTok followers you have. And every promoter and venue will have a different criteria. So like some will care about your Instagram. Some will care about your Spotify monthly listeners. Some will care about TikTok. Some will factor in all three and some of them will only pick one. And in the past, it was Facebook pages. And the crazy thing is a lot of venues, like, you know, artists, a lot of the time, they don't get paid that much for a show. They might get paid, you know, let's say a couple hundred bucks or whatever. You know, especially if they're an opener, they might even get nothing. But they'll make their money from merch. A lot of venues, at least in the States, take between 20% and 30% of all merch sales.
I hate that so much.
Which is like insane. And so because of that, and there's a great video that when this video is not a live video, but a final video, I'll remember the link, but it's by Bad Snacks on YouTube. Mm. She went on a tour with some other artist and she did like a post recap and she explained that. And I was like, oh my God. That's a thing. And I Googled it and I just found all these stories of people doing it, which is just like nuts. Like a venue like, oh yeah, you can sell your merch in here, but we're going to take 30%. It's like, why?
That's so crazy. A lot of times the margin on that is pretty small for a lot of artists too. It's not like...
That's why concert merch is so expensive a lot of the time. Like, why is it concert shirt $50 when online it's like 30? It's like, that's why.
Yeah. They have to get their... They have to make it worth their time too. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's why I'm not super into... doing shows. I am looking forward to the opportunity to one day do it. It's just, it's not part of the laser focus of people listening to my music on streaming.
My reason for not doing shows is that I did a bunch, not like a ton, but like a good amount when I was a teenager and like the band that I had at the time. And you know, we didn't do like big shows, we were kids, right? But I did a bunch of acoustic stuff as a solo artist, like open mic nights, and then I played various local fairs, and some of them were paying reasonably well for the fair gigs. I ran my own open mic night with the band. We played a bunch of different shows, local venues. There's this church that had like a metal scene, and then there was...
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was the basement of a church. We played there a couple times, and then we played a few battle with bands, stuff like that. But as soon as I got into recording music and like... I guess recording music, but also writing with a computer and more writing-y stuff with production, I was just instantly like, this is my favorite part of music. Like, I never really liked the playing show aspect. Like, it's fun, but it's like, it's so much work, it's so much time. You're usually getting paid badly unless you're a larger artist. And it, if you get to the larger size, it can be incredibly well worth it money-wise. But it's just like... I don't love it. Like, and so I'll probably end up doing it at some point if all goes well, right? If there's enough demand for it, hopefully I would do it again. But it's just like the writing and production, it's like, that's where I'm at. And just, you know, a lot of people don't get that. But
yeah, I understand that perfectly. I mean, that's the reason I do music is because when I make a melody that I love on my computer and I'm filled with emotion, it's like that moment right there is what it's all about.
Yeah.
Since mine is just EDM, I don't do my own singing, so I wouldn't even have a mic. I would just be DJing my music. The idea of doing a show is very easy. I mean, I would show up with my music on a USB, I would DJ it, have some other people's songs in there, and basically would just be sitting there listening to it on amazing speakers.
Yeah.
So that checks out for me. But yeah, if I were a band, I also think it would be fun to be in a band. I have one idea that one day I will do a tour with a punk rock band, and we'll just do punk rock covers of all of my EDM songs. And I think that would be a really fun thing to do.
That would be fun to do.
I don't blame you for not wanting to do shows for that reason.
Yeah. Maybe someday again, though.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we talked about things that you think are worth it for marketing, but I think we forgot about what things you found just suck. Or didn't work for you, at least.
Yeah, so I guess we'll put doing shows at the top of that list. Not that I've done shows and they haven't worked out. It's just that the time it takes to get that rolling and the outcome of that, I don't have much faith in. Mainly because I also see a bunch of other DJs, especially in the DC area, who have no one listening to their music, but they play a bunch of shows. So like, I don't care about that. I want people to listen. Other things that haven't worked. I was pretty lucky to find good sources on what to do in when I started marketing my music. There wasn't any big mistake I made. Like, I luckily avoided bot-filled playlists and sketchy promotion companies. So there have been like small things that I've done that haven't worked too like great, like a bad ad campaign, or I signed up for a Clubhouse account back when that was a thing. Do you remember that?
I downloaded that app and I opened it for 5 minutes and I was like, fuck this. Like, I am not doing
the worst. The people giving advice on there, like talking like they know what they're doing. It was brutal. But that reminds me of actually the number one thing that I did for a while that didn't work was be a part of artist communities that would listen to each other's music. Doesn't work. It just doesn't work very well unless the people in that community really somehow dig your music. then it doesn't really work. It feels good to be able to go into a Reddit group, post your link on a big New Music Friday thing where all of the artists get to spam their music link, but that just doesn't do shit.
It is
a huge waste of time. And I did it for a while, and I was part of Discord servers where you could share your music, and then people would give you unwanted feedback on it, and nothing about it was a good time. I think that's something that most people try when they first start out, and it's a good thing to get away from.
It can work for some very specific types of artists, but it's generally a good thing to avoid. Like, if you're making house music or even various types of electronic music, it can actually make sense to have an audience of music creators as your people. But like, you're probably not going to get the type of fans you have in your head you want when you do that. Because a lot of them are just like, they're going to interact with the stuff, so you interact with their stuff. It's not really the point. But like, a cool thing if you're doing like kind of DJ house music stuff, it's like a lot of those guys play other producers they know's music. So kind of building a rapport and knowing people can actually help. But for 99% of people, it's just a complete waste of time. It's similar for like a YouTube channel too. I've talked to artists who like, they're kind of also want to be a YouTuber to kind of promote their music, but like they're making tutorial videos on their channel. And it's like, that's a great way to grow a YouTube channel. You're probably going to build an audience of people that don't care about your music, like I've done several times.
Yeah.
Like this channel, a lot of people don't know, used to be, first it was screaming lessons, so vocal screaming lessons, and then two was music production, and then I was tying in the music production so I could drive people to my music, and then there was the music marketing. But like, all my music videos used to be uploaded to this channel, and then I learned over time that the audience, like I built an audience, so it's like, cool, right? Awesome. You did the thing you wanted to do. Problem is, it was not for my music. And yep. I've done that several times. And that's why now I have a separate YouTube channel that's Andrew Southworth Music. So that channel, it's just going to be my music. No tutorials, like everything there is for my music. And now this channel is just like, it's just the marketing and business, because you can build the wrong audience. And if you join those producer things or those like follow for follow things, you're going to build an audience of the wrong audience, essentially.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is actually something that I should add to my list as well, is doing things that aren't related to my music. Because I'm not planning on building a marketing business myself. I want to be a part of your marketing business. but I mean, for a while, I would do like TikTok videos related to music, but like that doesn't get people to like your music. Like your song has to be in that TikTok, and people have to hear it and go and listen to it because that was the part of the TikTok that they liked the most.
Yeah.
If it's not like, and that's, I think that's why Facebook ads work so dang well, because they hear the song. They're not being tricked into going into this, like, I don't know, funny comedic video or to like see a tutorial and then maybe go like your music. It's like, here's the music. Click on the link if you like it, and that works. So yeah, artists spending a lot of time in the like artist circles and the feedback groups and posting, you know, being a YouTuber as well, if that's not what part of their plan, I think is just most of the time not worth it, especially at the beginning. I mean, you made a good point about artists who can, you know, send their songs into those groups and then other DJs will pick it up and start using it. But most of the time, the artists that do that kind of thing are new, and so their music is not good enough to be picked up by a DJ and played anywhere. I think a lot of times, by the time artists get really, really good, they're no longer doing that kind of marketing because they don't need to.
Right. Totally. And actually, there's one thing I haven't brought up in this live stream. It'll be on the final video in several places. But for those of you that are watching and are interested, and maybe some of you have booked consultation calls with me before, but now Alex is going to be doing consultation calls like through my business as well. And so there's a link in the description if any of you are interested. It's my new consultation booking page. It's probably not complete yet right now, but it's fine. Just ignore the stuff. Like, I don't think the contact form works yet. So please be gentle, or let me know if something's wrong via email. But you know, if you want to book a call with me or Alex, you can go in there. You can see testimonials for both of us. You can see what we kind of each specialize in. Alex is also available for European hours, a little more friendly, whereas I only do like later hours. So, yeah, check that out. Link in the description if you're into it.